Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Oh, and we're back. And some of my least favorite discussions, the things that frustrate me most domestically. How about that stuff? So do you want to talk about guns? You want to talk about the shooter in Michigan, that the family, the whole debacle that is? I have a new phrase, Jeffrey.
What is
more
it?
More Republicans in office just means more dead kids.
I mean, sounds about right.
It is time now for something positive.
We might be headed to the promised land.
The promised land. And finding our external liberty once we internally liberate ourselves.
The problem can only be solved when there is a kind of coalition of conscience.
Because that is how it works.
This is the beginning. It is not the finale. And that's why we're here. And that's why we rally.
We've got to be that creative minority.
Find a way to get in the way. I got in trouble. It was good trouble. It was necessary trouble.
Franklin, I know we've got to do something.
I'm going for it. Like, Republican voters have blood on their hands.
Well, this
next election.
I mean, given that, you know, you have a large percentage, like, basically information that's out there right now, mm-hmm. 90% of people who are aligned democratically have been vaccinated, with 10% not. But when it comes down to Republicans, it's been more like 50-50.
Yeah.
Or 60-40 or something like that. It's wild. And then when you look at the data of who's dying, that's being conglomerated by the CDC, and I will say, from all of these individual reporting states.
Right.
CDC's not making this shit up. They're right. getting they this gather. Information from each state.
And you can
go look up your own states. Right. You can look up your own state's information. The reality is that unvaccinated people are 14 times more likely to die than vaccinated people are. That's as of the last 2-week period.
You know what's interesting? I went and got my booster last week. Mm-hmm. 10 people in front of me in line, all conservatives, and all getting their boosters, which tells me 6 months ago they got their shots. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's a misconception. I think at a community level, it's more based on people's fears more than it is political.
Oh, absolutely. And really, like, this shouldn't have been a political thing to begin with. Like, it shouldn't have been.
Anthony Fauci, the communist. What?
what shots for everybody?
Right.
Oh, God. Yeah, you know damn good and well Ted Cruz is bitching about vaccines and blah, 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 but you know that fucker got his shot. Yeah. And he's just being a fucking prick to everybody else.
Yeah, he's just being a prick. I don't know, because it's TV time.
That dude loves to hear himself talk. That's really mm-hmm. what it boils down to.
But he thinks other people like to hear him talk when he knows that they don't, because whenever he talks, they don't listen unless he does some stupid conspiracy shit like
this. I'm convinced that Ted Cruz just jerks off to Ted Cruz talking about Ted Cruz.
Yeah, I know, right?
I mean, I don't have any explanation how one person can have their head that far up their own ass.
Yeah, I know.
So, whatever. But I would say let's start with guns.
Yeah.
Maybe because
I want to say, I want to get another debate going. I posted our gun series debate from a year ago, September. Jeffrey, there was actual footage in the theme song of Kyle Rittenhouse. You know, it was so weird to go back and listen to like what the news reports said from people at the time to what the court ruled. It was just so interesting to me. So go check that out on YouTube. It's under Red Light Spotlight playlist. And it's pretty interesting. But Jeffrey, you weren't there for that. And I want to get another network debate going because I think we need to keep discussing it.
Well, so this one's a fucking mess, up one side and down the other. But not in the same way that, you know, the whole Rittenhouse debacle was.
Right.
So this is, you know, when you have one segment of the population saying, you know, these shootings are all mental health issues, mental health issue, mental health issue, mental health issue.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not inclined to necessarily disagree because there has to be some level of mental health issue and when you're willing to go kill a bunch of people.
That's right.
That said, it seems as though there was a very clear picture painted of this being a mental health issue.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents chose to do nothing.
Right.
So what we don't, there's, so let's start with what we don't know.
They didn't ignore him. They encouraged him. I think there's a slight difference there. You know what I mean? But I want to say
from what I've seen, it's a mixture of both.
Right. What I'm saying though is mental health is a gray area that we have to, it's a slippery slope. We have to be careful. We can't just blame every gun violence incident on it because then innocent people that are feeling sad 5 years from now could be tagged. So I want to be careful on that. That mental health goes in coordination with other things. If I feel like killing people and I have no access to a gun, then I'm not going to be able to do it as readily. So there's other factors too.
There are other factors, but we can go into that.
And it comes down to regulate yourself, which is what we always say.
Regulate yourself before somebody mm-hmm. regulates you. So right. let's start with some things that we know we don't know about this whole situation.
Yeah.
Number one, we don't know a whole lot about the kid's mental health or what he was searching, what he was writing, what he was doing prior to, I would say, before he got the gun. Because he got it as a Christmas present.
Right.
Now, there's a bunch of people out there that are probably going to be pissed. And I'm going to tell you, like, I got guns for Christmas and birthday. Mm-hmm. You know.
You lived in Montana. That's rational and it makes sense.
But here's the thing, though. You know, it shouldn't boil down to where you live being the thing that makes the sense. You know, the thing that, quote unquote, makes sense. I got a BB gun when I was seven. I got a semi-automatic 22.
If you're protecting yourselves from coyotes and wolves, that's different than being in the city protecting yourself from a mocha cappuccino, you know?
I don't know, man. There's living in the city, there's a lot more to protect yourself against than what you would think growing up.
I know.
But, you know, but here's the thing is that getting a gun for your birthday is about responsibility, number one.
Yes,
and of course. The question of whether or not the kid or the parents were thinking about this child's responsibility. Mm-hmm. It just goes to show that they weren't. Now, I grew up around guns.
Mm-hmm.
This was very much a very normalized part of my life. I had to take classes on using guns. I had to go out in the field hunting with my parents.
I wanted to too.
I went shooting for fun. I went shoot, you know, but with my parents. I went shooting for food. I had to shoot some stuff because I had to, you know.
More responsibility with more education.
Yeah, and when you were irresponsible and you fucked up, you got called under the carpet a number of ways. Now, I'm not saying all the ways that that happened to me were probably the best ways, but the lessons stuck. I will say that.
Right.
But when you're dealing with firearms, one of the things that you have to think about is that it doesn't take a very big fuck up in order to really fuck up.
That's right.
You know, right. I have a friend who his the last 4 years of his life changed because he wasn't paying attention while cleaning his gun. And he damn near died from a gunshot wound to his own leg.
Yeah. Alec Baldwin's career is over because he didn't pay attention.
That's another thing we're going to get into. Ooh. Since we're on the topic of guns.
Yeah.
So the reality is that when it comes to giving a kid a gun, like especially like anywhere that you might live.
Oh, I think it's normal.
I think it should be considered normal, but I also think that that idea of normal needs to be highly predicated on the idea that this kid is going out with you. This kid is shooting with you. This kid is learning mm-hmm. with you. This kid is taking classes with you.
You're regulating his education.
Absolutely. Because
and being regulated in your own education at the same time.
Because as any firearm owner will tell you, it's, you know, people who don't know anything about guns are usually the ones that are the most dangerous with them. You know, even just going back to Rittenhouse and that for a moment, that fucking prosecutor took that assault rifle and fucking flagged the jury with an empty gun. Gun safety number one, treat every gun as if it were loaded. Right. You don't fucking flag anybody with a gun loaded or unloaded. That's how mm-hmm. Alec Baldwin ends up in his situation. And that is a fucking nightmare. So
right.
people who know nothing about guns and gun safety are far more likely to, you know, like the unvaccinated population, people who know nothing about gun safety are far more likely to end up negligently hurting somebody because they don't know what the fuck they're doing. And mm-hmm. that's a problem. Then you got to move into the whether or not, you know, you have the ethical responsibility of doing anything with that firearm. And I can't speak to that kid's mindset. I don't know if that kid went through any sort of firearms training in any way, shape, right. or form.
We don't know the conversation his exactly. parents had before purchasing that gun.
Absolutely.
Or the experience he had.
Absolutely. Like from my experience, you know, I had years of hunting with my parents, going along on hunting trips, going shooting with parents before I went into hunter safety. Like I had spent 5 years walking around with a BB gun on my property, plinking birds or whatever I happened to quote mm-hmm. unquote find to shoot, which was usually just me shooting at trees and bushes and, because there wasn't anything to shoot.
Again, in a more rural area.
I grew up in Montana. But the idea was that, you know, you get used to handling that firearm safely. And mm-hmm. you get used to, you know, that self-responsibility. Did I fuck up with a BB gun? Yeah, sure I did.
Probably.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've had my fair share of ricochets come back and smack me and scare the shit out of me.
But then again, you also had somebody to go fall back on and say, what did I do wrong? You know
exactly.
what I mean?
But then, you know, at 9, I got a semi-automatic 22 that I still have.
That's beautiful.
And so guess what? There the you up the ante and being able to fuck up. 22 can actually travel a long fucking ways, what most people don't realize. Those things can actually those bullets can actually go out about a mile.
I didn't know that, but I believe it. It's a small caliber though, right?
It's a good starting set.
It's good for target practice. I used it in the beginning to target practice. So
they're great for target practice. They're great for small varmints. Like mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many fucking prairie dogs and rabbits that I shot with that thing. That's very much, you know, but there again, it's like you leveled up, you know, with a BB gun. Yeah. You probably, you know, it was either going to suck if you got shot with one or ricocheted with one, but you know, the likelihood of you dying because you fucked up with a BB gun, pretty minimal. 22. You can kill a person with a 22.
Right.
I mean, it's a lot easier to do it.
You can really hurt somebody with a BB gun right off the bat, but like,
you had
some training and education before you reached the point of going solo, even with the BB gun. You know?
Absolutely. Like okay. I had to learn how to shoot from my dad. I had to, mm-hmm. you know, one of my favorite lessons of shooting was right after I got, you know, that BB gun. It was Christmas time. I was with my dad. we set up some targets in the fucking garage, you know, just some, you know, styrofoam cups. And, you know, lesson number one, know your lesson number two in gun safety, know your target and beyond. And my dad shot that BB gun. It went through the cup, bounced off the metal, came right back and hit him in the fucking eye. No shit.
Wow.
And so, like, one of my first lessons. What?
Sorry. Is he Ralphie?
Right? You'll shoot your eye out. So, which is why, like, when I go shooting, I wear eye pro. Guess what? It's like, you know, shit happens. And so when I go shooting, I'm wearing ballistic eye pro because I don't want to catch a bullet in my eye. I watched my dad catch a BB in his eye.
It's always and he's easier lucky, to learn.
He's lucky he didn't lose his eye. He lost vision in it for about a day and then it came back and he was fine. But I remember watching him like fucking hit the deck after he got it. Because I just hear, pow, ding, fuck, and he just drops.
Yeah. It's easier to learn a lesson from somebody else's mistake than it is to learn from yours. So pay attention to other people.
Yeah. And especially if the mistake is small enough, you know, you both get to learn a lesson. But when the mistake is big enough, you're going to be lucky if you survive it.
Yeah.
So, you know, so there was a lot of learning. Like, sure, guns were fun and cool, but you didn't fuck around with them. And if you did fuck around with them, there were consequences that you paid for that. Like, you know, luckily, like, you know, most of my egregious mistakes were flagging people with a rifle or with a shotgun, and you know, not a good day. This shouldn't be a good day when you do that. And when I taught hunter safety, I had to kick a kid out who consistently flagged everybody at the range because
self-regulation.
So when I was in hunter safety, we had to carry around. Literally, these things were, you know, they would get like a rifle stock or a shotgun stock, and then they would just put a couple of wooden dowels on it. So that way, you know, and painted the wooden dowel black, and that was your gun. And you would have to walk around with this thing. You'd have to store it safely. Whenever we did stuff and move around, you had to hold this thing safely. And you had to make sure that, you know, you had it pointed away from everybody else. Your finger wasn't on the trigger, things like that. So, like, you got a lot of practice before you got into the real thing. Exactly. And then when we got out into field day, you know, we had actual live firearms that we would shoot with. But even still, our field day when I was a kid still was with those wooden guns. Now, when I got into teaching hunter safety in the place that I did, kids would actually carry around actual firearms, but instructors had to go through and they had to check each of those firearms, and they had tape to show that they were cleared and locked and all of that other fun stuff. So you couldn't actually do anything with the firearm. So like they'd have bolt locks in them and things like that.
It's a progression of education though.
Exactly. Get used to actually carrying a firearm, you know, and the consequences are swift and severe. So I can't speak to any of that with what this kid may or may not have done. What I am saying here is strictly my experience with firearms and instruction and growing up around guns. Are guns cool? Absolutely. Idiots are not cool. And that's whether it's kids or whether it's parents, it doesn't matter. And
idiots raising idiots raising idiots. Eventually, there's going to be a loss in the fucking curve. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. So we have nothing to say what this kid's experience training, what the parents' experience training, any of it was prior to this incident.
Right.
What we do know is that number one, the gun that was used was purchased for the kid. There's some debate over whether or not the gun was locked up. Now, the parents say it was. The prosecutors, media said it wasn't. Now, here's where I'm going to say that this is where it becomes, you know, an interesting gray area. A gun can be locked up, but if it's readily accessible, that doesn't mean that it's necessarily locked up. So, for example, let's say that the kid has the key or the code to a gun safe. That does not mean that the firearm is stored securely, and at least in the eyes of the law, here in Washington especially. Now, having a concealed weapon permit is a little bit different, but even still,
Not at 15.
Right. You don't have a concealed weapon permit at 15. In fact, no. I'm pretty sure, if I remember right, I'm pretty sure in every state you have to be 21 in order to have a concealed weapons permit.
I think so, yeah.
I'm trying to remember the reciprocity laws. You have to be 21 in the state of Washington.
The prosecutor saying it wasn't locked up because obviously he used it, right?
So, well, and
the parents might be like, well, we locked it up, and he might have unlocked it and took it.
Right. Out. Well, that's the other question is, you know, if, you know, for example, like, you know, anybody who has any type of safe, you're going to have a couple of, you're going to have a couple of different mentalities. Number one, some people carry their safe keys with them. Some mm-hmm. people stash their safe keys in other locations.
Right.
It's different for everybody. You know, I'm of the mindset of I don't put my safe keys with my car keys, because the last thing I need to do is lose my safe key and my house key at the same time.
Yeah, right.
But at the same time, my safe keys are not in the same place as the safe itself. So and you know, just that kind of separation of, you know, you have to make intentional moves if you're going to get into the safe.
Yeah.
Or you have to be told the code if you're going to be able to get into the safe.
Mm-hmm.
And so there'll be more information that comes out on that. And
Bill, if you get your kid a gun, you're responsible for that for
absolutely.
The rest of time, right? Like
not for the until they're 18.
Oh, well, if your kid is 30 and kills somebody with a gun you bought, you're still going to feel that shit. You know?
Oh, I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, you're definitely going to feel that shit. Absolutely.
I mean, not legally responsible, but morally, you're going to feel that.
Absolutely.
I hope you do.
You know, because you're going to always have that question of, you know, how did I, you know, what did I do to teach them or not teach them? But at some
right.
point, at
right.
some point, even as a parent, like, you've instilled enough life lessons in your kid. Mm-hmm. And it's an ongoing process. Oh, my mom's still teaching me shit, and I'm 36. You know, and I know that having kids of my own, I'm going to be teaching them stuff as they get older, and they're going to ask for my knowledge, or mm-hmm. they're going to watch me screw up and go, that was awful. I'm not going to do that.
Right. Or they're going to screw up, fix it, and hide it from you, but learn a lesson that way. You know?
Yeah, hey, that sounds familiar. But
sometimes you want in training, sometimes you're on your own and you fail and you got to fix it before the boss comes back, you know?
Right. Exactly. But you know, in this case, you know, without knowing the training thing, we move into what we do know.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, the kid got caught researching ammo. Now, this is tough. I don't know what he was able to look up, pull up on the computer. Personally, you know, whether the school allows stuff like that to be searched is, you know, that's up to the school. But
I thought it was on his phone and a student saw it and reported it.
Not sure. I've heard on a school computer.
Yeah, that's my problem.
It's, you know, well, we won't know until later. But the issue there is that searching ammo, like searching ammo is one thing. Like, especially like if, you know, given number one, if you know anything about guns, ammo is hard to find right now, and good priced ammo is hard to find right now.
If I have a gun, I'm looking for different ammos. I want to know what each one of them does. I want to know what they're made of. I want to know which one's more powerful, less powerful. I want to learn about ammo if I just got a
right.
gun. That makes sense. I don't know if you should be doing it during class or in school.
That's not the greatest thing. Like unless you're in like what I did, I was actually in physics class and I was researching ballistics because guess what? Ballistics are part of physics.
Right.
And you know, whether it's bullets, whether it's catapults, whether mm-hmm. it's rocketry, you know, there's an element of physics to it, but it's about intent. What was your intent on searching this? I was searching up ballistics and ballistics charts, not because I wanted to go shoot up my tiny little school, but uh-huh. because I was in physics and I wanted to learn more about the physics behind how different bullets operate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is there
I also
is there
don't think
designed?
A kid I don't think a child should be like shopping at all during class. Like that was my point. Like,
oh, absolutely.
It's not the bullets. It's the shopping. I don't think somebody should be shopping for shoes while they're trying to learn either, you know?
But also too, like, I don't know that he was actually shopping. I don't know what he was looking at. We know that he was looking right. at bullets. We don't know what the reason or the cause was.
Window shopping looks like.
Maybe. So number one, and what ends up happening is the school reaches out and says, hey, this, you know, is a little concerning.
Mm-hmm.
Look, all I can tell you is where I grew up. Like, if we would have had this level of technology when I grew up, if you didn't think that there were about 30 kids that went hunting after school that wouldn't be looking up bullets,
right?
You'd be crazy. It's you know, difference, you know, absolutely. You know, once again, are it goes down to an intent.
Are many people hunting with a 9mm?
Oh, hell pistol? No. Are you kidding? But I don't, once again, I don't know what he was looking up. Like, we know right, he was I'm looking just, up bullets. Yeah. I don't know if he was looking up 9mm or what.
See, this is a this is a personal thing for me in the fact that every gun has its purpose. It's built to do something. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't use a bazooka to target practice. I wouldn't carry around an AR-15 in a city environment. I don't need something that goes 10 miles and shoots through everything it passes in the city. So what I'm saying is like a pistol is good for city protection, but you don't need a, like a long rifle to go around your neighborhood
And I would say that as somebody who lives in the city, but also has rifles, you know, it's about what you plan to do with them. You know,
that's my point. Yeah. If you're getting attacked, pulling out a rifle doesn't make as much sense as a gun in that moment of being mugged. So for me, it's absolutely not situational.
And that's where you go back to gun safety and the four rules. Number one, know your target and beyond. Like if you have an AR, you know, there's a good chance that you're going to have something that's going to go through and through. And then the question is what's beyond that?
But my point is, if a mugger is standing a foot away from you asking you for your wallet, you don't really have the room to pull out your AR and shoot it. It's longer than a pistol. So for me, it's just about utilitarianism. It isn't about power or anything. You use certain things for other things and use a pistol to protect yourself in an urban environment. To me, that's how I feel, that rifles and long guns are more for hunting and more for the uniqueness. Well,
rifles are meant for long distance engagements. Let's be real honest.
Which aren't as many in an urban environment.
No, they're not as many in an urban environment unless you're in a much more open setting.
Okay, thank you. I just needed to clarify that from like a year ago because I don't think rifles are more deadly than a pistol. I don't think a pistol is more deadly than a rifle. I think you use certain things for certain things. That's all.
That's the thing is, like, I'm a surgeon with either one of them. So like I'm a surgeon with a 22, and a 22 doesn't exactly have a hell of a lot of stopping power, but I can put four strategically placed shots and I can take a person down real quickly.
Sure. But it would be easier if you had an AR-15 and a scope, if it was say 1,000 yards away.
So at 1,000 yards away, you're starting to push the limits of that AR.
Well, you're not going out and hunting bear with a 22 pistol. It's just
hunting bear with anything like, less than a 308, you're nuts.
But there's different things for different purposes. And that's what I had a problem with Kyle Rittenhouse was an AR-15 isn't a close quarters combat sort of weapon, you know? And so to me, it was just stupid.
It's not a close quarters combat weapon, absolutely. And whether or not, like, this is the tough part is that, you know, what you're to kind of go back into this a little bit, that would be like saying that, you know, the U.S. military being positioned in, say, somewhere like Fallujah shouldn't have had their M4s on them at all because it's a city. That's not the right answer. You know, that's not the right answer simply because, like, you know, what you have to realize is that, you know, it's about accuracy. At 50 yards, an AR is going to be a hell of a lot more accurate in terms of round placement than a pistol is. And
but
so
what
that's
about one yard, one foot, close quarters in a room with a confrontation? I understand what you're saying. I just don't think it makes sense to pull out a long gun to shoot at somebody that's shorter than that gun length is, you know?
It all depends. Like, it all depends on what you have available to you.
Mm-hmm. And that's, yeah, that's true. And that's difference. True.
If you only have an AR available to you, that's what you're going to pull out, whether or not it's the right tool. You can have all the discussions about whether it's the right tool for the job. Mm-hmm. Like in terms of home defense, with an AR, I'm not going to pull an AR out in my home. Why? Because that's that bullet's going to go through every fucking wall in my house.
Yeah, that's kind of my point. And I stand a chance
of inadvertently hitting somebody else. Whereas that pistol, it's probably going to go through a few walls because, let's be real honest, sheetrock is not going to stop much. Right. But it's going to lose a lot more velocity based on the caliber and the cartridge of the gun than it is, say, an AR.
Right.
But once again, that's a huge distraction because determining what the tool for the job is very different than application. And what you have as a tool and what the right tool is often two very different discussions.
Well, I agree, but if you have a choice to bring a pistol to a close quarter protest or an AR-15, I just find it funny that you would choose an AR-15 for close quarters. That's it. It's like you're saying.
The likelihood of shooting somebody and having it inadvertently hit somebody else in the crowd. I mean, look what happened with Alec Baldwin and just a long Colt pistol. he brought a pistol and that went through somebody else. That went through one person and hit somebody else as well. So, I mean, the reality is that when it comes to any sort of gun whatsoever, you are making calculated decisions when you're using that gun.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
But to talk about what is going to be the best option, I mean, the best option, like with Kyle Rittenhouse, is that kid should have never been brought over there by his mom, and that's the real answer. But moving past that, one of the things that we have to consider with this case out of Michigan is that besides the training, was the fact that the parents were put on notice. And the parents were put on notice multiple times. So, you have the, hey, your kid's looking up ammo. It's like, okay, don't. And the mom says, you just can't get caught doing it. It's like,
right.
Not the right answer I'm going to go with. It's like, hey, you know what? I appreciate you wanting to look up ammo. Do it at home.
Yep. 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 But there might have been a plan to have a further discussion. Like, your kid's kind of depressed lately and you want to make sure you're not attacking him, and pushing him. So
you've got that. And then the next piece, which is the kid starts. This is where things get real damning really fast, where the kid put a drawing out there of a bunch of people lying around bloody and said, I can't make the thoughts stop. Please help.
Yep.
So at that point, this is where it gets real tough, because there should have been more involved here than just the teachers and the parents. I will say that, because when you see a drawing like that, that should be, you've got a school resource officer, or you've got a school psychiatrist, a mental health law enforcement professional, get involved. That is one of those situations where I don't know what Michigan's protocols are, but that right there you know, because the parents were like trying to play it off as a joke. And yeah. And
I don't know how you see that and ever let that kid go away. You know what I mean?
Right. I don't know how, like, as a parent, like if one of my kids drew something like that.
Yeah.
No, we're having some discussions immediately with a mental health professional.
I mean, there's no way you're walking away from that thinking.
No, and I'm going through their no way. I'm going through their shit. It's like, right. Look, there are a few times that I'm ever going to like straight up go through your stuff. Mm-hmm. But something like that, I'm going through your shit. And I'm going through it thoroughly. You know, I keep my stuff locked up for a good reason. And you know, only two people know what the codes and the keys are, and they're both adults.
I like that.
And there's a reason for that.
So they pulled the kid and the parent and the teacher and the principal in for a meeting, right?
I'm not sure how many, but I know it was the teacher and the parents for sure.
I know there was a base amount of people.
Yeah, and there was some serious concern, and you know you're hearing that the parents didn't search the backpack, and I'm going,
yeah.
I mean, that probably should have been something that the parents did, but also at the same time too, like there should have been some type of mental health professional there or mm-hmm. school resource officer there.
Yeah, because he should have been going back to class. He should have been going to counseling But I don't see the parents necessarily thinking, well, the gun is locked up at home. I know it's locked up. I know where it is. He promised not to use it. He doesn't have it. I don't see why their first reaction, but I'm not a parent, is to say he has the gun. You know,
I would be more
inclined to believe that it's not an issue. You know,
to me, it doesn't matter, because growing up around firearms, there are a few things that, you know, this is as serious as a heart attack. When something mm-hmm. like this comes up, it doesn't matter. You deal with it.
Once you buy your kid a gun, you're responsible. So like period every moment, that's the thing. Every moment is your responsibility.
So. And so in this moment, there should have been no question. If the parents weren't going through that, their kid's shit right there on the spot, mm-hmm. there should have been a resource officer and a mental health professional. Because I mean, in terms of today's day and age, I think that alone would have been probable cause for an officer to go through that kid's stuff right there.
Well, I agree. I had an officer go through my car because I locked it. I got locked myself out. He found a bowl, you know, but mm-hmm. I don't think the kid should like, it should have gone from that meeting to the parents taking the kid home and having further discussions. Like,
right.
I don't like I'm saying, he would have never been out of my sight at least the rest of the day until there was ongoing counseling, you know?
There was I would say a negligent level of inaction mm-hmm. that was present.
Yeah.
Now, I would say that it really depends on what happens next. You know, I think Michigan has every reason and right based on this case to say that, you know, if teachers have anything like this happen, that there should be a resource officer and there should be a mental health professional in those meetings, and that people should be going through that kid's shit.
The sheriff said the school didn't follow protocol.
Okay, I hadn't seen
them. You know what I mean?
I hadn't seen that.
The sheriff's department, law enforcement, has protocols that go into effect when this happens, and it didn't.
Okay.
And the parents fought to keep the kid in class as opposed to how it was supposed to go. So there was a lot of mess ups in there. But I did watch the sheriff's press conference, and he was really bummed that he was responsible for a situation that they didn't address sooner. And
right.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's the thing is that if there was a protocol in place and that didn't get followed, then, mm-hmm. then there's part that's on the school as well.
Hey, is that teacher going to be charged with manslaughter because they didn't follow protocol? That's a tough one, right?
Well, that's the tough part is that, you know, if that teacher didn't have the means to be able to do that, if it was up to a principal or a mental health professional there, you know, passing this blame buck around is not going to do anybody any good, other than it's like,
I agree.
This is serious as a heart attack. This happens. These things have to happen, period. End of story. There is no mm-hmm. ifs, ands, or buts. There's no arguing. There's no nothing.
That's my point.
This is what happens.
We can, we can place blame on everybody, right down to his friends that knew he had a gun, but didn't know if he had it on him. Like we could, or we could just figure out how to fix the solution or address the situation, learn from it, and get ready for the next time. Because they had shutdowns that really saved lives in that school. Not enough lives, but you know, the shutdown actually went pretty well. I mean, considering, thank you.
You know,
it feels gross to say, but more people didn't die because of what we learned from other school shootings.
And that's really unfortunate. That's an issue. This day and age in my, you know, in especially for my kids.
Yeah.
You know, so you have what looks to be protocol failures. You have failures on the part of the parent. You have all of that. Then when the school shooting actually happens, you have the mother sending a text to the kids saying, don't do it. And the father leaving work to go home and see if that gun was at home. And it wasn't. So bad decision making all the way around.
What do you think was going through the dad's head when he saw the gun wasn't there?
Oh God,
that's his moment of realization, right? Like, oh, I fucked up. Or was it like, oh, I couldn't have known. Like, I wonder what he thought in that moment.
It doesn't matter. I think at that point, like, you know, you can talk about what was probably going through his head, but it doesn't matter. I think that, you know, the failings of earlier in the day are far greater than whatever he was thinking in that moment afterwards.
But did he learn his lesson in that moment?
No, like, but he gonna learn.
Did he see the error of his way in that moment and say, now I'm fucked because I didn't do things right ahead of time? I want other people to realize there's moments like a stepladder, moments of realization till you get to the point where you can't get past it.
It doesn't matter. The moment of figuring this shit out happened when they got called into the school.
Or like, giving him the fucking safe combination.
Or whatever they did. Yeah. Like, you know,
with a series of little fuck ups that led to a point of no return is my point, you know.
Well, and I would argue that there were little fuck ups and the big fuck up came before the school shooting when those parents were in there.
Yep.
Don't give a shit, you know. Like as a parent, if I found out my kid made any type of threat like that, damn well bet that whatever is happening the rest of the day is me, number one, making sure that every other kid is going to be safe from my kid, number one.
Because you're a parent first and a friend second. You don't need to be a friend to your kid all the time.
And number two, then we're going to figure out what therapy looks like. You know, we're going to go meet with somebody immediately.
Yeah.
And from there, we're going to figure out what has to happen in order for things to get better. Because you have to think about public safety first, especially if, you know, if your kid may be a danger to others. And that's tough to say. That is tough to say. And this is coming from somebody who was a danger to himself. Like, you know, with my own depression issues, I was a danger to myself. I never wanted to hurt anybody else, but I was a danger to myself. And so as a parent, you know, what I learned is that you have to stop the danger aspect first. It doesn't matter if it's to somebody else or to the kid itself. Yeah. You have to stop the danger aspect. And then from there, you have to figure out getting help for that kid immediately. It's gotta be like, you drop whatever fucking anything you have going on, it's immediate. You're going through steps. Like if you have to put your kid on a 72-hour hold, then so be it.
But I think if your child is depressed and you know it, you don't know if he's not depressed unless you talk to your child every day. You need a baseline of who your child is. You can't just pop into his life one day and say, are you hiding depression from me? I can't tell. You should know your child.
Well,
to a certain extent, you should have built that trust and relationship up to where they could come to you and say, I'm feeling depressed, and you don't go, oh, I hate you, you're going to jail, I'm gonna punch you, or something stupid, you know.
Even in this day and age where there's more information about depression out there, there's still a lot of people that don't understand what depression actually looks like.
Uh-huh.
And that's the tough part is that it's hard to know what depression actually looks like in terms of youth and how do you address that. unless
I'm getting judged for it, though. When when you bring it up and get judged for it, then you don't know. Nobody will ever know if that person is depressed again because you judged them and now they're hiding it and you know nothing. If they can act good and you can give them the gun back because you think they're happy, they're faking it.
Could be.
Maybe.
Absolutely.
At times, in certain situations.
Absolutely. So that whole situation is where things get really fucked up for the kid.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's talk about a couple of interesting parts about this. Where number one, they're charging the kid with terrorism. I think, you know, I was interested to see how that charge was going to play out.
Yeah.
Because if the kid was, you know, planning this out, like if this was a well planned out thing, now there's going to be a lot of conflicting definitions of what well planned out means. You're going to see the defense's uh-huh. version of it. You're going to see the prosecution's version of it. It's going to be kind of a fucking mess.
You committed an act that terrorized people, dude. It's pretty simple to me.
But now here's the question. If the kid has mental health issues, can you really call it terrorism? And that is where, number one, there is no precedent for charging anybody with terrorism in a school shooting. That has never happened. That's so right. So that made it interesting, number one. But now when we got more information about the kid, you know, making these drawings saying, I can't make the thought stop, please help, to me it became less likely that terrorism charges would stick. And that's the tough part, because I mean, you can definitely try and draw the line between terrorism and mental health. You absolutely could try and make that link. I think it's going to be a lot less likely to, you're going to be a lot less likely to make that link. I mean, by the purest definition of the word terrorism, was it a terrorist act? Absolutely. There's no question about that. But I think you also have to factor in intent in that line as well.
Sure.
And the question around intent and somebody who is suffering from severe mental illness is very difficult to paint that picture, because I would argue that from a psychological standpoint, I don't know that we know enough to say whether or not that intent, that level of intent can or would exist. That's well beyond what I'm capable of of knowing at this point. And so there's going to be a lot of I don't knows in this.
Anybody that murders somebody else has to have at least an inkling of insanity to me. You know?
I mean, I don't disagree with that at all. But at the same time, too, I think, mm-hmm. you know, when you look at terrorism, you know, you've got, you know, people that thoroughly believe what they're doing is right and just. And Does that actually apply in this case? And the answer is I don't think so.
People are saying we need a domestic terrorism law, and I'm saying we don't, because I don't want that to become this gray spectrum to where anything they want to put under a terrorist act is, because they just justify it afterwards. Like, I want to be real leery of domestic terrorism when other laws fit just as fine. Murder is just fine, you know. Like, murder is going to put him away forever. I don't need to call him a terrorist, you know.
Well, and I think that's just it, is that I think that there are elements of terrorism that you can also charge, but I think you have to prove intent on that the intent was to not just murder, but scare the public into panic. And I, you know, you can make the case that, well, any shooting is going to do that. Absolutely. But I don't know that it's tough. That's one that's going to be really tough to see, and especially when there is a very clear mental health portion to this.
I want to say that maybe they added that in just to keep the bond up higher. You know, like, you can drop a charge later, but you can also make it seem more than it is to get, I don't know. Did he even get bond option? I wouldn't
I think
he did.
Oh, I don't remember what the bond option was. I will say this, when it comes to the removal or adding of charges, you know, they could have added terrorism later if they wanted to. I think what this boiled down to was a strategy on the part of the prosecution for future school shootings, is that they would start, you know, by adding terrorism into school shooting charges, which I don't think that they're necessarily wrong to do that. Now they can choose to drop that later, But at the same time, too, it's like when you look at the number of school shootings that there have been, sure, you've got a lot of kids that end up taking their own lives that happen afterwards. But then you got some that were out to just send a message, whatever that message was.
If a kid wants to kill a bunch of kids, calling him a terrorist is only going to ensure that he does that. You know, a terrorist says he's going to be remembered forever, whereas, you know, murder just says you're going away.
And that's the tough part. You know, everything is kind of relative in that regard.
Yeah.
You know, and it, what it boils down to is intent. And so does
Seems
that
like
mean
overkill
that
to me.
I wouldn't necessarily disagree, but at the same time, I can also see why they're looking at doing that. Because when it comes to, there's another factor in here is that when you have terrorism as one of the charges, it opens up a lot of different resources for you to be able to use.
That's what I'm saying. They, like, I called it for Bond, but there's more options for you if you use a variety of charges.
And so, like, when you have somebody that's listed under terror, you know, charged with terrorism, you know, you have a lot more resources at your disposal.
They could have called it a hate crime if one of the people was a minority, just to get the resources from the federal government to investigate it more, you know.
Which then turns out that you kind of needed some federal government resources when the parents got charged with involuntary manslaughter and fucked off with themselves.
They weren't fleeing.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't fleeing.
Yeah. they were found quite a ways away. They had withdrawn $4,000 in cash. They were hiding in an empty commercial building.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go with bullshit.
Me too.
Here's the thing. So, having a bunch of friends and family that work in law and deal with, I would say, some of the worst of the worst. There have been times where you know, basically, you've had people that had committed some of the most heinous crimes imaginable, and they went to their attorney's office, and there they sat with their attorney until they got everything that they could in place, and then they called local law enforcement and the prosecutor's office and whatever other agencies that were going to be involved. And they flat out made the case. It's like, my client is here with me. They will be turning themselves in. Yep. You can pick them up at this location. We can figure this out and do this however you want. But I'm here to preserve my client's rights. And I have seen the worst of the worst peacefully arraigned under the guidance of their attorney. Like, I've seen it personally. I have seen it done through friends. I've even, you know, read about a number of cases. The fact of the matter is that if those attorneys, if they were not in direct line of sight of their client at that point, the choice that they made the moment that they were arraigned, it should have been that those attorneys or somebody from their office, another attorney, was headed there to meet their client, to, you know, essentially be there with their client and make sure that they're literally on the phone with law enforcement and negotiating that release to law enforcement.
Yeah, they didn't need permission to turn themselves in.
They didn't need permission to turn themselves in. And more importantly, like, there needed to be a lot more communication than there was. Mm-hmm. And when that, guess what? There wasn't the communication there.
I mean, so, the prosecutor didn't even tell the sheriff's office the charges were coming. Like, the sheriff didn't even know these people were going to be charged. So he didn't have them under surveillance or be watching them like somebody would do if the charges were pending. You tell law enforcement that these people are going to be charged so law enforcement can be ready. And right, they weren't, which allowed these people to escape.
Public Access America.
It's always funny because, like, you know, especially because as, you know, libertarians, we get a ton of shit, even amongst other libertarians.
I think political philosophy is a lot like religion, and where there's moments you have to go on faith and trust what somebody else is saying.
The main focus is this, like, less dependence on the government, because, well, we've seen how that's gone.
And you don't have to do that if you think about it in a human way.
You know, more dependence on connections with each other.
So you can always bring it back to what would one human do for another? What would 100 do for 100?
People looking out for people.
Find Public Access America anywhere you find your favorite podcast every Sunday and Thursday. And join the chat on YouTube at Public Access America every Sunday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Communities looking out for community.
Public Access America. History in the making, making history in the making, in the making, in the making, in the making.
Yeah, well, and the actions, like, so in legal terms, what you see is you see a number of different things. Like, prosecutors do it, defense does it. You know, the idea is that you focus on a specific act and you say, oh, no, well, this act wasn't, you know, them trying to escape. And this act wasn't them trying to escape. And this act wasn't trying to escape. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the totality of the circumstance, is what it's called, each one of these individual actions don't make them trying to escape. But when you put all of it together, it paints the picture that they were absolutely like trying to get the hell out of Dodge.
The lawyers did stick up for them in their arraignment. I got, mm-hmm. I woke up and turned on the TV and I watched the whole thing. So
yeah, I watched
it was an interesting process, you know, to watch that.
Yeah. And I think that that's, you know, whether or not they had another attorney in there that could have been working on this or not, it's hard to say.
Right.
But all I know is that, you know, those defense attorneys put out a statement the night before saying my clients will turn themselves in.
Mm-hmm.
And then they didn't.
Right.
And that was not a good day for the defense.
Mm-mm. Or the perceptions of the parents. I was just, you know, it's funny, the whole time I just wanted to ask you, do you think the parents should have been charged? Do you think this is a new level in charging?
It is a new level in charging. And the question becomes, you know, is it an appropriate level? And I think absolutely in this case.
Okay.
I do from the standpoint of if the parents had no clue, if there weren't any of these other things that happened at the school,
right,
and this kid literally just like walked in and did what he did with none of this other stuff.
Or yeah, like a Columbine sort of Sandy
Hook. Then I would say possibly, because I can't know what all scenarios existed at the home before.
Yeah, would gather the evidence and make a determination. Right. We can't do that here. We're not those people. We don't jump to conclusions like the media does.
No, but based on the totality of the circumstances that happened, the ammo thing by itself, not enough to make me say, It was when the kid had drawn the picture that he did, that mm-hmm. said, and it had the things on it that it had.
He asked for help and people denied him that help.
Exactly. And at that point this is where it's tough, because I don't know if it's incumbent upon the law, if it's incumbent upon the parents, under how Michigan has it.
Right.
But as a parent, at that point, there should have been absolutely no question that there were certain steps you needed to take. Mm-hmm. And those parents did not do that.
Yeah.
And so in this case, absolutely. I think that they're absolutely they should have been charged then as they were. Yeah. And that is, as somebody as an avid gun owner, you have to take safety very, very seriously, whether it is safety for yourself, safety mm-hmm. for your kid, or safety for the general public. You have to think about these things constantly when it comes to firearms ownership. And there's a good reason for that. These things are deadly on a good day. And in the hands of somebody that doesn't know what they're doing, it's dangerous. But in the hands of somebody who does know what they're doing, it's worse. And in the hands of somebody who is absolutely committed to making something happen, there was already evidence that this kid planned on making something happen. That drawing, that reason that the teacher brought those parents in, was proof positive that this wasn't a joke, this wasn't art, this wasn't anything that should have been poo-pooed. Now, you can talk about whether the school is at fault for this, whether law enforcement's at fault for this.
I just want to stop it from happening again. I want to let people know where it was that it went derailed, and I think you hit it. I think, like you said about guns, I think taking your responsibility as a parent seriously is imperative to creating a child that doesn't go around killing other people. And so I think if your child at any point in any manner says, even as a joke, I need help, you need to shut up and say, tell me more, and carve out space immediately to listen to them every time.
And you
even
need
if
to
it's
take...
about something stupid, it's not stupid to them, right?
Right. And that's the other thing too, is that as a parent, you have to be willing to take some pretty drastic steps as well. You know, if you think that your child is potentially going to harm somebody with a firearm, and you have a house full, you have a house that has several firearms in it, you need to be making arrangements to have those firearms removed from your property in the short term.
Right. Because even great parents have kids with issues. I'm not saying that, but you can mitigate that a bit. And you can see, I like to see the future by paying attention to the present, right? And you can do that with a child. You know where they're headed if you pay attention to them, but it's hard to turn a cruise ship from hitting an iceberg when you see it right there, you know?
Right.
Give yourself enough time and space to see the trajectory of your child.
And don't ignore the fact that you're about to hit a fucking iceberg.
Right, right.
That's the other thing. And then be like, oh, and then send a message later saying, don't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was that for?
So when the shooting started and
yeah, I just wonder what her goal was, what she thought would actually happen by telling her kid, don't do it after he had started.
I don't know what her goal was, but I know what that's going to be used for.
Because there was no news report that she saw that said he's about to shoot people, right? So there was no way that that was preemptive. No. She heard that he had done it and told
She heard that there was a shooting and then wrote, don't do it.
Right, right, right.
So the fact of the matter is that that's not exactly a very helpful text for the defense.
Right. No, it isn't.
Yeah, that was it's a bad day in terms of, you know, in terms of all those families. And there was a massive fuck up there. And whatever the protocol is or is going to be after this, I think that it's something that they're going to get figured out, and that needs to be replicated in every state.
Yeah, I just think parents can't push the responsibility of raising their child off on law enforcement or educators. Like, at some point, it has to be the responsibility of a parent to keep that kid on track. And like I said, even great parents have kids that go off the rails, and that's going to happen, but it won't happen as much as if we pay attention to them.
Right. So this is truly a tragic incident. There's no question about that, but there were some very obvious failings, and those, unfortunately, there are people who are dead and wounded because of those failings. And and I think that, you know, there's going to be a need, the need for justice is strong, and the reality is that people abdicated their responsibility.
You know, there's a judgment where people are convicted, but there's never like a paper that says these are the root causes that could solve the issue next time. You know what I mean?
Well,
there's no scientific panel like addressing and studying these statistically to prevent them. They're just saying, oh, this guy did it, he's guilty, bye. We don't want to know anymore, really.
Like, you know, and that's just it, is that, you know, that's unfortunately been strategic. You know, if it's a mental health issue, and having to admit it's a mental health issue is going to require then that you supply mental health resources in order to prevent the issue. And so I would say that, unfortunately, the system is functioning as intended.
I think it's a mental health issue, but there's other things that contribute. You know what I mean? Like, mental health alone doesn't kill people, but mental health and opportunity might. So
mental health and opportunity might. And, you know, unfortunately, inaction also does.
But, you know, if you take away somebody's gun and they want to kill people, they'll find another way to do it.
It's true. It's very true. I mean, unfortunately, you know, Waukesha is dealing with the fact that you had several people die and several people injured because somebody ran over a Christmas parade.
Oh my God, yeah.
So the idea that it's, you know, that there isn't another way is unfortunately false.
Yeah, he used a truck, right? Like, I was trying to think to myself, like, guns give you the option to kill, but what doesn't? Like, even water gives you the option to kill somebody. So it's a tough thing. You name an object, and I could probably think of a way to kill somebody with it.
You know, and you know, when we look at what mass killing looks like, it's an entirely different discussion as it is.
Yeah.
I think what it boils down to is that, you know, there is absolutely a mental health aspect, and it's been something that's been shoved aside. Mm-hmm. Rather than addressed, you know, people who want to keep their firearms rights, but not address mental health issues in regards to mass killings.
Yeah.
What's going to end up happening is you're going to have your rights adjudicated for you. Cause at some point people are going to they're going to have enough, and they're going to decide what your right is. And if you don't want that to happen,
regulate yourself.
And if that includes, you know, addressing the issue through mental health, then it's time to actually start having an earnest discussion about helping people through mental health and putting the resources in place so that kids are getting adequate mental health services available to them, whether it's at school, whether it's after school. You know, it's there. We know that it can help.
There's more privacy in mental health. Honestly, the fact that somebody needs to be reported if they're thinking or want to talk about these things is really problematic. You know,
this kid
could have found a counselor just on his own, walked in, sat down. I wish that's the way it was, that he could have found somebody to talk to before this happened. And I wish it would have been his parents, you know.
Yeah.
But maybe not. They seem a little stupid. Maybe I don't want him talking to them. Maybe I want him finding professional help. I wish it was more readily available, accessible, and private so that people could have these conversations, you know.
Well, and that's the tough part is when you're looking at the edge of public health, you know, if somebody says, hey, I'm thinking about killing a bunch of people at my school, I don't know that I'd want just the parents involved or only the therapist involved. Because when it comes to public health and safety, I think you have to be as cautious as possible.
But do you think there's a way that a therapist, I'll end on that. I have to end on this. Do you think there's a way a therapist could work with the patient in moving that forward? Like, instead of the therapist reporting them, having the person agree to report it, right? Like, that isn't that what therapy is, getting a person to a better place of acknowledgement?
In terms of something like that, I don't think so. But I think basically what you can do is temper the response, you know, right. So basically, you know,
the immediate response.
So basically, you know, it's that, hey, you know, let's be on alert for, you know, rather than, oh shit, something's happened, you know, and that's the difference is that I think that even in terms of like a, you know, let's say that you have a therapist that reports the kid saying, hey, you know, I want to hurt people. You know, law enforcement has to be notified, number one, but number two, gives people the power, that gives family the power to figure out how to keep, you know, number one, themselves and their kids safe, but more importantly, the public in general safe. And of course,
but it prevents the kid from actually ever starting the process, unless he draws a picture that says "help me" and people ignore him.
You know? Well, and what it boils down to is that if you're going to number one treat it, number one, and number two view it as punishment, then yeah, it's never going. If it's a punishment thing, it's never going to get better. But
kid's
going to
see it as punishment, even if it isn't. That's, I don't think it's punishment. I think the kid would see it as punishment.
Well, and that's where you have to set up these expectations, and that's where education comes in.
And parenting, yeah.
Yep.
I love you, Jeffrey. Thanks for being here.
Love you too. You take
do this
care
all the time. Go give everybody a hug.
Will do.
Happy holidays. Thank you for listening to Public Access America. You can find our live stream on YouTube every Sunday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, and find our podcast anywhere you find your favorite podcast. Yay. Oh, shit, I almost hit the wrong button.
To those who would tear the world down, we will defeat you.
This is our moment.
This is our time.
To those who seek peace and security, we support you.
Yes, we can.
And to all those who have wondered if America's beacon still burns as bright, tonight we prove once more that the true strength of our nation comes not from the might of our arms or the scale of our wealth, but from the enduring power of our ideals, democracy, liberty, opportunity, and unyielding hope.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbow. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life.
Ask not.
Yes, we can.
What your country can do for you.
I have a dream.
Ask what you can do for your country.
I, poor little children.
Yes, we can.
One day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression.
In this lifetime, you don't have to prove nothing to nobody except yourself.
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward.
That's how winning is done.
Welcome to Public Access America.
Yes, we can.
Sunday live streams Sunday on live YouTube.
I wanted to run out of that tunnel for my dad.
On Twitter. Apple Podcasts.
Stitcher, Smart Radio app.
Public. And Spotify.
Yes, we can.
Public Access Public America. Access history America. In the making. Making history in the making.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.